Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's.
You got no.
Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Jackpot.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
And welcome to show number 119 of The Final Table. I am Paul Harrah's, sitting at the feature table in the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room. My partner, Dennis Phillips, just got off a plane about 40 minutes ago, landed at Lambert, and is racing over here. He will join us live here in just a few minutes. Also joining us on the show today, Annie Duke, the commissioner of the new Federated Poker League. We told you last week that they had come up with 218 qualifiers, professional poker players, who are being invited to play in this new pro poker league that is scheduled to debut at the Palms Hotel and Casino in Las Vegas in August. We told you then that we would invite Annie to come on and tell us which of the invitees have accepted the invitation, who will be there, who's going to pay for it, and much more. So we'll talk to her about that. Plus, she's got a new book that'll be out on May 31st called Decide to Play Great Poker, and we will talk about that as well. Then later on, Dusty Schmidt, old leather ass, as he calls himself, for his days sitting in front of computer monitors and playing online. He was a member of Team Poker Stars Pro Online, no longer a member of that, of course, but he has been writing some very interesting blog pieces recently about, well, how the poker industry kind of needs to reboot after Black Friday, and also about how the poker industry needs to respect itself a little bit more. Some very interesting stuff coming up from Dusty Schmidt, who also has a new book out. It is called Don't Listen to Phil Hellmuth, and it features about 50 pieces of advice that have been spouted by other people who've written books and poker pros and Phil Hellmuth himself. They're supposedly the official words of wisdom of the industry, and Dusty will rebut some of them on today's show. We'll get to as many of those as we possibly can. Before we get to anything else, though, let me get a quick plug in for some World Series of Poker-related stuff. If you want to come to Harrah's St. Louis and qualify, you're going to have four chances in the month of May over the course of the next three weekends. This Saturday at noon and 3, when I say four chances, I mean 4 days with two chances a day. So really eight chances for you to qualify in the double shootout format that we've talked about so much here, the one that launched Dennis to the 2008 November 9. Just a $200 investment that landed him a $4.5 million payday. Lots of us here in St. Louis have been hoping to replicate that kind of success, and lots of people always show up for these. You'll have another chance at that this Saturday at noon and 3. If you're a tournament poker player or want to go to the big dance, the main event of the WSOP, here's your chance to get in for a relatively inexpensive price for $200. You win the table, and you go to the final table, and you win the final table, and you get a package that includes not just your buy-in to the $10,000 main event, but also another $1,000 or so in spending money and the rest. So that's this Saturday, and then the following two weekends, including Memorial Day weekend. For details on that, go to harrahs.com/STLpoker. Now, we are just passing the point where we're 3 weeks away from this year's World Series of Poker, and there is some news about that. We were wondering, after Black Friday, what would happen to TV coverage of the WSOP. We've already told you about some TV poker shows that no longer exist, like Poker Stars The Big Game, which is still being produced for this season but will not air on the Fox stations across the country. It will air in Europe and Asia and on PokerStars.tv, their online site. But the Million Dollar Challenge is gone. We hear that High Stakes Poker on GSN has found a new sponsor and will continue, certainly for the last couple of episodes of this season, and may come back for another season next year, although there's been no official announcement from the network or the production company about that yet. And we haven't heard anything about Poker After Dark either. You will not be seeing things like the Devil's Poker Championship and some other things that were there. But the WPT, the World Poker Tour, seems unaffected with their Sunday night slot on FSN, which continues to feature both Mike Sexton and Vince Van Patten. And also, I think this year doing some great work is Tony Dunst, who we had on the show a few months ago. But when it comes to the World Series of Poker, everybody wondered, would it mean that they'd be cutting back on the number of hours that they would telecast on those Tuesday nights? Well, in the last few days, ESPN and the WSOP announced that not only are they continuing those Tuesday night telecasts beginning on July 26th and running right up until they're done with the November 9, but they're also going to be doing some same-day live coverage of days 3 through 8 of the main event. From July 14th through 19th, they're going to be doing coverage on ESPN2 on television and ESPN3.com, their website, in which they will have streaming video and audio of those feature tables at the main event. Lon McCarron and Norman Chad will do the TV versions that you'll see on Tuesday nights. Lon and a poker pro named David Tuckman will be doing the play-by-play during that six-day run of live poker. To my knowledge, that's the first time they've done something like that on television. A few years ago, they did a couple of things on ESPN 360 with both the players and the fans sequestered. So that'll be very interesting to watch for poker players who have kind of gotten off on the live coverage of the final table of the main event over the last couple of years, and PokerStars has been doing it with some of their EPT and PCA events. That'll be going on at the ESPN this year. My partner Dennis Phillips has just arrived. Hi, what do you think of doing events like this?
I found out about that a couple of weeks ago. I was talking to some of the guys from the WSOP and everything. I'm actually a little skeptical of it.
Really?
Now, PokerStars has done it down at the PCA. They're doing it again at their main event over in Madrid. But they're sequestering the players, and they're sequestering the fans that want to go see them in there. Therefore, there was no computers, no phones, no messages. The players will never know what somebody did just a few minutes ago to them.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding of this is, because they're doing the feature tables and the new setup that Maury's got out there, and they're doing it from day three on, the 30-minute delay is all there is.
Right.
That means that in 30 minutes, somebody can walk up and whisper in your ear, you realize that he just pushed you off your hand when all he had was a 7-deuce?
Mm-hmm.
And if you had any tells, if you had any feelings, if you whatever, you can confirm them right then. It will bring a new element to the game.
Because this will be a half-hour delay with hole cards.
With hole cards,
as opposed to some of the other previous WSOP coverage that we've seen of the main event, where we did not get to see the hole cards. Remember last year we all wondered what the heck did Joseph Chung have when he made a couple of moves?
Absolutely.
Not on the famous last one, but a couple of other times when he was making
moves.
We found
out what he made on the last one. Yes.
Right, but we were watching and trying to figure out what is he doing and how, you know, he must be catching cards, and of course it turned out no, he was just being hyper aggressive and very clever at the table. But you didn't know that because you didn't see hole cards. With this, the viewers will be able to see hole cards, and you're concerned that somebody could walk in there and give a player information about what someone else at the table has done.
Well, you can look at this two different ways. You can look at it as another tool. That if you actually do your due diligence and you have somebody else watching the film, you have somebody else coming in there, they can tell you if they've seen something or what the gentleman's hole card or persons, I shouldn't say gentlemen. There
right.
are some very capable ladies playing this.
Yes.
It absolutely could bring a new element to the game, and I'm not for sure it's going to be received very well.
Well, they say that we'll have two feature tables, and they'll switch back and forth every 30 minutes for the online feed, but they will cover any all-in and call situations
Correct.
At either table. And, you know, you played at a feature table.
A number of times.
Yeah, last year was it that you were at the table with the grinder?
2 years ago it was with the grinder when I took all his chips, or almost. Which
yeah.
was really I keep reminding him of that, by the way, because that's about the only time. He took me out of a couple of other tournaments. So I have to keep reminding him of the time when I did take his chips.
Yeah. Now, in that situation, I mean, you told me later some of the hands that you were playing against him.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
And Maria Mayrink and some of the other, you know, non-pros who were at that table, and you were pushing them around. You would not like to have had somebody coming up to them at a break and saying, hey, I was watching in the room, and here's what Dennis had.
It was so awesome because, well, you were talking about the pro from Brazil down there.
Mm-hmm.
I played like six hands against her during the course of that day. I showed two of them. The only two I showed both times I had pocket aces.
Mm-hmm.
The other times I had junk.
Yep.
And if she'd have known that, it could have made a total difference.
Yep.
Yeah, this is, like I said, well, when they introduced the hold cards to start with, there was a lot of objections to it, and people wondered about it. Now it's the accepted norm.
Yep.
This may be the same way, but I'm telling you, there's some people that are going to object to it to start with.
Well, we'll see. It'll be the days 3 through 8 of the main event in July out at the series. And I mentioned, you know, ESPN was not cutting back on their coverage. They're actually adding three new events that they will cover on TV. The WSOP grudge matches, which are classic matchups from previous main events, including Moneymaker Farha. They'll also have the $25,000 heads-up world championship and the 50K poker players championship, which is the one that the Grindr won.
Yeah.
So those will all be on, and those will be streamed unedited on a five-minute delay online, but no hole cards.
Correct, correct.
So, and I should mention, by the way, that the hole cards for the main event, they will only show post-flop. You'll be able to see the hole cards post-flop. So if somebody makes a move against somebody else and the other person lays it down, then you won't get to see the hole cards.
Correct.
Only for post-flop play. So there's that. And oh, the other piece of news that I wanted to mention here off the top is I got my check from PokerStars today. I'm very happy about it. You know, I waited a few days after the initial announcement because I knew there was going to be a rush.
Yep. Then,
you know, I went on and hit the cashier and withdrew all the funds, and not a lot. I don't have a lot online. But now I got none. The check came, and I just deposited in the bank, well, so that's a good thing.
Two quick things. The returns have been, some of them as quick as 36 hours from Stars. They actually hired extra people. They're trying to process these as quick as they can,
yep,
which is great. The second thing is the FPP points are in there.
Mm-hmm.
You can now convert those over to cash and everything, too.
Oh, that's nice.
Yes. So the people, because, I mean, at one time I had 100 and some thousand FPP points. So, I mean, you know, there's a ton of it there, and that is good value, and you can convert them into cash and cash that out also.
All right, cool. Our first guest on the show today is Annie Duke, who, as we mentioned, is the commissioner of the new league being run by Federated Sports and Gaming. Annie has been very, very busy since the last time we talked to her, which was just after she severed her ties with Ultimate Bet. She has a company that she's co-founded with her fiancé called My Mixed Nuts. She's been doing an online talk show of her own, the Annie Duke Show. She's also got a new book coming out on May 31st called Decide to Play Poker. And just last night, she was the host of an event at Children's Hospital in Boston that I understand raised over $500,000 for that
Sweet.
Fine institution. Annie, welcome back to the final table.
Thank you. Glad to be back. I have to just as a good promoter, correct the title of my book. It's Decide to Play Great Poker, not Decide to Play Poker, but available for pre-order on Amazon right now, and I think next week it's available for pre-order on Kindle.
Yep, Decide to Play Poker would be a terrible title, and I knew it actually
That'd
says Great Poker. It says Great Poker right here in front of me, and I apologize for that. Before
that's
we talk
okay,
about,
that's all right, don't worry about it.
Before we talk about Federated and the new poker league, I mentioned that the last time we talked to you was just after you had severed your ties with Ultimate Bet, and I just got to say this as a friend, good timing.
Well, you know, I severed my ties with Ultimate Bet, obviously, because I had some other things going on that we'll be talking about that I was really interested in. Sometimes, you know, it's luck of the draw.
Yeah. We did get a couple of tweets today when we mentioned you were on the show, and three people tweeted, please ask Annie if she got all the money that you be owed her.
What a question, guys.
Well, you know, yeah, I don't want to talk specifically about my situation, but I'm in a similar situation to other people. And, you know, obviously I really feel for the poker community in many regards, not just in terms of UB, but just in terms of the deep effects that Black Friday has had on everybody and on people's livelihoods, and not just obviously the people who are playing poker online or had money online, but the many people in the media who saw their livelihoods really at least cut back or in some cases gone, and you know, people in TV productions that got axed, and players who are having to make a choice to perhaps, you know, move out of the country or find a different line of work. And you know, it's obviously wide-reaching effects, and I mean, I'm a poker player first, and this is affecting some very, very dear people to me. So, you know, really watching the events unfold and just reinforcing for me in a huge way the need for regulation.
Oh, I absolutely agree with that. And you bring up a very, very good point. There's a lot of people in kind of the side venues that may not be actively playing poker online or at the tables that are being affected by this. And I don't think people realize just how far-fetching this whole Black Friday has been for a community and a country that's already been in a recession. It just added to it.
Yeah. Has it had any effect on your plans for the Federated Poker League?
It actually doesn't affect our launch plans. We you know, I think that with a lot of the TV productions, what you're seeing in terms of the problems is that they were supported very much by what are called endemic sponsorships, which are sponsorships within the industry. And we actually didn't really include that in our business plan. So our launch plans are moving forward as planned. And, you know, obviously very excited about what's happening with the league.
All right. So last week, just before we went on the air, you announced the 218 pros who qualified, the initial qualifiers based on the criteria that you had developed, which we talked about on last week's show. You're one of them, so you didn't have to call yourself, but did you call the other 217 players, and what kind of response have you gotten?
Well, let me just first clarify that while I am one of them, I am not playing. So I think there was a little bit of confusion about that. The reason why we posted my name there is because everything with us, really, we're striving for transparency, and obviously if someone ran the qualification criteria over my results, they would see that I qualified, and we didn't want the math. Well, how come she's not on the list if she qualified? But I'm not accepting my card, and I'm not playing in the league.
Okay.
I have emailed almost all of the 217 players. Anybody who's listening who hasn't been contacted, it means that we don't have your contact information at this point. I think the number of those people is less than 10, which isn't bad when you're trying to collect contact information for 217 people. So everybody's gotten a personal email from me. I'm still in the middle of calls. Obviously, the calls take a long time. So I think I'm about at this point, I would say about a third of the way through all of the calls. I should have them done by next week. Just trying to reach out personally to everybody to welcome to the league and make sure that I answering questions.
I was wondering the kind of response you're getting. I'm sure everybody wants to be able to play in these. But again, that's at $20,000 a crack. You're talking about a number of different tournaments with everything that's happened on Black Friday with the lack of sponsorships and everything now. I think there's going to be a lot more bankroll management going on. Don't you think that's going to affect maybe the number of players that you're going to get at these tournaments?
Well, I can tell you that the response that we've been getting has been just overwhelmingly positive. Actually much better than I even would have expected. Players are very, very excited about it. In terms of bankroll management, when you're looking at where you want to put your money, obviously we have $2.6 million in added money over the first season. We're going to have a great television platform. There's going to be profit sharing with the pros that we're going to be announcing over the next couple months where pros are really going to be participants in the success of the business. So I think that there's a lot of motivation for people to put their dollars with us. Obviously, the events are also rake-free. That being said, you know, we did definitely have discussions about this. And, you know, from my view, having been in poker for so long, in 1994, when I played my first main event, the main event was 10,000. And obviously, that was when 10,000 was a lot more money than 20,000 is today, even with the events that just happened. And there were, you know, 300 people playing in 1994. And by the time 2000 rolled around, there were over 500 people ponying up 10,000 for those events. And this was in the days before, you know, the kinds of satellite programs that you see nowadays. You know, these are the top 200 or so best players in the world. There's going to be very good equity. I think that people aren't going to have trouble raising the funds to enter, at least not from the feedback that I've been getting from the community. You know, but obviously we'll be responsive to the community, and the players are going to have a big voice in what we do. So if the players really speak out about this issue, that's something that we put on the table.
Do you have a TV deal?
We do.
Sweet.
I'm not announcing what it is, but we do.
Oh, come on, Annie. Here's a nice platform for you. Give us an exclusive.
We won't tell anybody, really. No problem.
Right, this is just between us, right?
Yeah. There you go.
We'll be announcing the TV by mid-June. Everybody's going to be extremely happy with the television. I promise it is network in a great time slot, not in the middle of the night. And I think it's going to be really amazing for helping to give the best players in the world a great platform. And I think that that's something that is a really deep commitment on my part. Having been such a huge beneficiary of the platform that I was giving in the beginning of this century, you know, around 2003, 2004, and knowing what the repercussions of that platform were in terms of my ability to create a livelihood for myself, you know, and seeing the real lack of those kinds of people sort of emerging, you know, from 2005 on. There just aren't very many people who emerged as really well-known players, even though there are players who are incredible poker players. I just don't think that there's been necessarily the television opportunities that were available originally to the people when they were, you know, I mean, if you think about it, in 2000, I think it was in 2003 when my brother, Howard, won two WPTs. I think that the combined total between those two events was less than 160 players across both events. So if you're playing in WPTs where you have, you know, like 70 players entering, you know, maybe a maximum of 100, there's just a lot of opportunities for an individual player to get on television, get a lot of television time, and create a relationship with the fans. You know, in situations where you have thousands of people entering an event, obviously it becomes very difficult for an individual player to get enough television time to create a personal relationship with the fans. And we're, I think, in some sense trying to sort of, you know, dial the clock back in order to give these younger players who are so incredible that opportunity so that we can really partner with them to help create the next great generation of poker brands.
Yeah, it seems that to get TV coverage now at a poker tournament, you have to bark. That was the lesson I learned from last year's main event. This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris here at Harris St. Louis, and Annie Duke joining us by phone from Boston talking about the new Federated Poker League, which we're going to continue to call it until you tell us you have a new name.
We have a new name, just like we have a television deal.
Okay. Should we ask the third leg of the chair then?
Yeah.
All right. What about sponsorship? Sure. Can you announce any of those?
We're working on sponsorship. We're confident that we're going to be able to bring non-endemic sponsors into our world. I think that the television platform is going to be very helpful for that. We have had great interest from some of the mainstream agencies that work in sponsorship. We're finalizing those deals now. So that actually, we don't have those deals in place yet, so I'm not being coy with you on those. But we, you know, one of the things that we'd like to do is not only bring opportunities for outside sponsorship to the league itself, but also to the players also. You know, my dream would be to have a player playing in a tournament with Visa on their chest, you know. I think that would be really incredible to have those kinds of sponsors, the same kind of sponsors that you see on people's clothing when they're playing golf, to bring that into poker, and that's a huge goal of ours. And I think that professionalizing the sport and giving this more professionalized platform, I think is going to I think that's going to facilitate that going forward, and that's certainly something that we're very deeply committed to.
Well, speaking of patches on their chests, a lot of people who've been aligned with the online sites for the last few years got those deals because they were on TV a lot, and that gave those sites a lot of visibility on TV. But now, after Black Friday, will pros who play in your events be able to wear a Poker Stars patch or a Full Tilt Poker patch? I mean, we still have European pros and Asian pros and Latin American pros who may still qualify for the Federated Poker League. Would they be allowed to wear that patch for your televised events?
Well, you know, basically we're working through that now. Obviously, that particular issue is in flux right now as we try to figure out, you know, what the position is of the DOJ, what the position of the network might be, so on and so forth. What I can tell you is that from Federated standpoint, we want everything to be as player-friendly as possible. So we're coming in with a very player-friendly attitude that then is going to have to be cleared. You know, and I think that that's really in flux. I mean, to tell you the truth, I'm going to be very interested to see what the finalized logo policy is for example, the World Series this year, because I think everybody is a little bit confused about what would be allowed or what wouldn't be allowed. And Dennis, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but as far as I know, the DOJ has not stopped the .nets from facing North America and people being able to play on the .nets that are facing North America. And I think that that's certainly a good sign that those logos wouldn't be an issue. And again, Federated's policy is very, you know, it may not be the be-all and end-all of the policies here, because ultimately the network is going to have to decide what can or cannot be shown on their network. But Federated's policy is to be as player-friendly as possible.
And you are correct. The .net is still allowed within, and it's can still be broadcast in the whole bit. In fact, if you look at the NBC heads up, there were a lot of .net patches that were still being shown there on that in the last 2 weeks.
Right.
But American players can only play on them for play money. You can't win anything on the .net.
Correct. Correct. If there's any kind of a prize.
But from our standpoint, obviously, that bodes very well for what kind of clearances we would have. So we're trying, like I say, we're trying to be as player-friendly as possible. Obviously, we're going to finalize our logo policy down the road as we consult with people to figure out what, just essentially just what is or isn't considered legal at this point in the U.S., because I think there's a little bit of confusion about that at this point.
A little bit of confusion, a little bit of gray area concerning the DOJ. We haven't heard that before, have we? Okay, off on a tangent there. Or I'll go nuts for 10 minutes talking about that. All right, why don't we go back to the actual? Let's go back to the actual tournament itself. How is this going to be structured? How deep is it going to be? How long are the rounds? What are you going to base it on? Similar to the main event, or your own structure?
Well, I mean, it's our own structure, but luckily, with three of the events that we have 4 days to get through 200 players. So obviously you can imagine the structure is going to be very, very skillful and pro-friendly. One of the events we actually have 5 days for, the heads-up event. What you're going to see is different formats. There's going to be some shorthanded formats, some formats that have one format that has actually mixed formats where the format is different on each day. A really cool heads-up tournament that has an innovative seeding structure along with it that will determine matchups, you know, in the same way that you see from March Madness or Wimbledon, where top seeds are playing bottom seeds in each bracket. And the structures are Matt Savage design structures, and we all know how amazing Matt Savage structures are. We're very lucky to have him as our tournament director. And I think that the pros are going to be really excited about it. You know, as you're getting into the last couple of days of each tournament, obviously you're going to be looking at not only 90-minute rounds, but when you get down to the final rounds, we're planning to have shuffle machines, which, of course, it expands even then the amount of time that you get to play at each blind level. So these are not going to be tournaments that are made for TV. These are going to be tournaments with amazing Matt Savage design structures that are filmed. And I think that that's a shift that occurred in the industry, you know, sort of in the middle of the last decade, where when poker first came around television, a lot of times the final table structures were being, you know, changed around in order to make it a little bit more friendly for the television crews to film. And obviously that was something that was very unpopular with the players. And we're really trying to be as player friendly as possible, so trying to offer them the most skillful structures available.
Well, I've got one more quick question here. I've noticed that in the last several tournaments out through Vegas and different places, at Stations, at the Deep Stack, at the WSOP Circuit event and everything, the numbers have been down significantly. Chester only got like 260 in their main event. I don't understand why. I actually thought the numbers might actually be up some with Black Friday happening and everything. Any idea or any insight on that?
Well, I agree with you, but at the same time, I think that there's going to be a temporary issue as people are trying to get their money offline. I think that as people get those funds, I think that that's going to be helpful, number one. And then number two, I think that one thing that we need to remember is that just the sheer number of satellites that were being run for a variety of events online. And then, you know, people were winning their way into these events. And even if it was the case that they had to cash off and so on and so forth, and all of that, I think from a mental standpoint, if you think you're playing for a certain event, you've kind of pegged it in your head. And I think that there's going to be adjustment. I think in some sense it's going to be on the casinos to develop more robust qualifier strategies in order to make sure that they're lifting up those numbers, because I think that a lot of brick and mortars became very dependent on the numbers that the online sites were really sending to them. And I think that that burden is going to shift back onto them, and they're going to have to start developing more robust satellite strategies.
All right, Annie, before we let you go, let's plug the book. It's called Decide to Play Great Poker. It's coming out on May 31st in the paper and ebook formats, including the Kindle format. You've got a chapter in there on pre-flop raise sizing. And I saw you tweet about this a few days ago where you say, when you raise, just raise enough to do the job. Are you seeing too many people who are 7, 8, and 10Xing it?
You know, it doesn't even, it's interesting. It doesn't even have to do with people who 7, 8, and 10Xing it, although obviously that raise is mathematically unprofitable. It more has to do with what I see from people is people who have a number. One of the things that's bothered me about books that I've read is that they'll tell you, you know, oh, you should raise three times the big blind, or if you're early in a tournament, you should always raise four or five times the big blind. And they give you these rules about this should be your raise sizing. And I've been at too many tournament tables where I'm sitting at a table and you see players who are raising two and a half or three times the big blind and getting down to one player, which is really a part of the big goal to raising, is just to get yourself down to one player. And this might be happening for 20 minutes, and then somebody all of a sudden comes in with a 4X raise. And what you realize about that person is that that's just their raising number, and that they're not really understanding that raising isn't about raising for raising's sake. It's about accomplishing the goals that raising is supposed to accomplish. And as I said, one of the big goals of raising is to try to get down to one opponent, because any hand poker is generally going to do better against one opponent. So if you're sitting at a table where, say, it's, you know, late in a tournament and the table's a relatively tight table that just happens to be the lay of the land, and you're seeing everybody raise two and a half times the big blind, I don't care if you read in a book that you're supposed to raise four times the big blind. It's too much. You don't need to. So that was the point of that, is that when you're raising before the flop, you should be looking to do the minimum that will accomplish those goals of raising. So raise just enough, because anything above that is wasted money.
Well, if that's any kind of an indication of the book, it should be a pretty good book. That's very, very common sense. I think it needs to be a lot more common sense at the tables. So I have one quick question. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I'm so excited about this book. It was 2 years in the writing. I had an amazing co-author by the name of John Vorhaus, who made my very dense theory, that's the way I think, into very, really very readable. Without him, I think that would have been a difficult read. And he made it really, really wonderfully digestible. And I'm just really excited about the approach, because it's very much a decision-making approach to Texas Hold'em, which I think you can see from what I just said, that it's about really what's your decision process in raising, why would you raise, what are the goals of raising, and then what now is the next decision, which is how much money you're supposed to be in the pot. And we go through that, and then what I'm really the most proud of in this book is that there's about 300 pages in this book just on post-flop play. And how you navigate different situations in post-flop. And that's a topic that isn't well tackled in the poker literature. And so just a lot of work, very, very scary to finish the book. I found out that it's really scary when you're laying out something that's so kind of deeply about your own intellect and you deliver it to the world, that's a terrifying moment, because that's when you get criticized, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I finally got up the courage, finished the book. It took me a while. And I'm just really excited that it's finally going to see the light of day now.
Well, we just tweeted a link to the book on both of our Twitter accounts.
Oh, thank you.
And we've also got a link to it up on the website for the Final Table. So we'll hopefully help you sell a few copies there, and talk to you again this summer, I'm sure, about the Federated Poker League under its new name, its new TV deal, its new sponsorships, and all the rest. Annie, thanks for your time today.
Okay, thank you.
Annie Take Duke, care. Commissioner of the Federated Poker League, joining us here at the Final Table on 590 of the Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcasts on thechipleader.com and, of course, via iTunes. When we come back, we'll talk with Dusty Schmidt, who has some ideas about how poker needs a facelift and has his own new poker book coming up, as the Final Table continues right after this.
Kits, does your granny lend you money? Well, this granny does. And right now, calling 800-GRANNY-8 will get you $50,000 for just $238 per month. Call 800-GRANNY-8. Get a low fixed rate and take a three-month payment break. That's 90 payment-free days to get your finances straight. Our customers are saving hundreds per month, and our friendly loan officers make it easy. Call 800-GRANNY-8 or apply online at granny8.com.
Great mortgage rates, call 800-GRANNY-8.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris. We are both today at Harrah's St. Louis. Thank you for listening every Tuesday afternoon at 3 o'clock. By the way, the Bad Beat jackpot here is up to $235,000. And we talked recently, Dennis, about how online players are going to have trouble finding the shorthanded games that they love so much. Last night, Harrah's started its first 1-3, no limit, 6-max game.
Cool.
And from what I hear, it went very strong last night, and they want to do it more often. $100 to $300 buy-in. You're getting some people coming in and trying that who are used to playing shorthanded online. Here's a chance for you to play it live instead of in a full 10-person ring game.
And I think as people get to play the 6-max, they're going to like it a lot more because you get involved in so many more hands.
You have to play more hands.
Absolutely.
And what's going on in Las Vegas, where you spend most of your time?
Well, the last few weeks, actually, I've been running out to stations, believe it or not. They've got a great tournament going on right now, a $200,000 guarantee, and they've not been filling it up. So there's a lot of EV value.
You're getting a nice overlay
I'm
there.
I'm getting a great overlay on it. And excuse me. That's the thing you need to look for right now with the bankroll manager we talked about earlier in the show, and we've talked about something like this.
Yep.
I think they had 170 in their first week and 150 in the second one. They're guaranteeing 200,000, so they're adding 30, 40, 50,000 a week to this. That's not going to last long. Too many good players out there are going to catch this and start playing there.
Yep.
But it's a nice, solid structure, and you get to play for a championship. If you finish in the top 25, you go to the championship at the Red Rock that's going to be at the end of May, and there's another $200,000 cash prize there.
Pretty nice.
Very, very nice.
All right. So we got you covered both in St. Louis and in Las Vegas, and with the guests. We had Annie Duke in the first half of the show, and here comes our second guest.
Well, our next guest is a poker pro called Dusty Schmidt. He was at the table when I was out there at the bike. We played a cash game called Live at the Bike.
Yep.
Played it with Kathy Liebert and a few other people out there. Had some fun for it. Dusty was a member of the Team Poker Stars online. I think he has resigned now, unfortunately. And he's also written about three different books. He had Treat Your Poker Like a Business, which I have read.
Mm-hmm.
He has a new book about Don't Listen to Phil Hellmuth, Correcting the 50 Worst Pieces of Poker Advice You've Ever Heard. I've not gone all the way through that one. But anything that's got Phil Hellmuth with a gag on it in the front cover is a good book for me.
Duct tape over his mouth. Dusty, welcome to the final table.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, guys. That's quite an introduction.
We're happy to have you here. You have been, in addition to the book, you also have been blogging recently about how poker needs a facelift, how we kind of have to reboot the industry in this post-Black Friday era. Talk a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of what we need to do as poker players is start to kind of respect ourselves a little bit more than we have been. I just, you know, one thing that kind of disappoints me, especially coming from a golf background, and, you know, used to seeing guys, you know, do things like call penalties on themselves and help their, you know, opponents look for lost balls and just all the friendly things that go on. I think poker, at least at its highest levels, of course, this wouldn't necessarily apply to just the game of poker in general, but I would definitely like to see poker at its highest level start to realize that, you know, we have something here as an industry. We got a big industry and a lot of interest around it, and it'd be great if we could all kind of get together and clean up the game and start to present ourselves a little bit better than we have been.
Well, I agree totally on that, and also we need to kind of pat ourselves on the back a little bit. We do a tremendous amount of work for charities that doesn't get recognized. I can't tell you how many different pros I know of that donate time and money and energy to helping worthy causes, and that doesn't get the publicity it should.
So. Yeah, that's exactly right. There's been so much work done by so many players. I became inspired about 2 years ago after the birth of my daughter to play poker in the streets of Portland for the homeless. I took my laptops out there and played poker in 20-degree weather and made about $21,000 that I was able to raise personally for homeless, and a lot of other people joined that cause as well and chipped in, and it got a lot of support. And, you know, but a lot of these things, you're right, don't get noticed. The first thing that people think of poker players is certainly not people that are donating, you know, money to charity, unfortunately.
Yeah, I want to go back to your earlier point about how we kind of need to clean up. Are you saying that we should start looking like Tony Dunst at the tables?
Well, I mean, I think if we could all just... you know, just try and present ourselves a little bit better. I mean, here we are on TV so much, you know, on ESPN, and you know, we have a great opportunity to kind of showcase the type of people we are, which the demographics will show is a, you know, a well-educated, high-income earning audience. And, you know, unfortunately, I don't think we're perceived that way. I see the way, you know, chess players, for example, are so highly regarded, but, you know, I know a world chess champion that I'm friends with, and, you know, he's told me that he thinks that becoming top level at poker is harder than what he accomplished. And so, you know, these are some pretty bright dudes, you know, we're trying real hard to earn a living and to present ourselves well, and hopefully that gets recognized.
Well, okay, it's not like it used to be with the backroom, smoke-filled, cigar-smoking, you know, veto in the corner type stuff, but how do we get more respect for the game then? What can we do to promote it and make the players like it, or make the general public respect it?
You know, it goes back to one of the things that we've talked about. You know, we were just talking with Annie about getting sponsors for the Federated Poker
Sure.
League. Jeffrey Pollock is the guy behind that, and he had trouble when he was the head of the WSOP. We've talked about this so many times, getting the major corporations. You know, here you have a room full of a few thousand young guys, mostly young guys. There are women
Yeah.
in there too, but it's mostly young guys. Where's Apple Computer? Where's Nike? Where's Pepsi? Why can't we get these big corporations to come along? What do we have to do, Dusty, to get their attention?
Well, first of all, it's going to start with eliminating the sort of legal gray area we have. We certainly need poker to become licensed and regulated, and I think that'll go a long way. Hopefully with that comes some sort of governing body that's either appointed or, you know, is formed by some type of union of some kind. I think that would be a nice start. And a lot of it is, you know, I mean, you got these companies like Apple and Nike, and, you know, these are global brands, and they're going to be comfortable attaching themselves to, you know, major legal sporting, you know, entities and people specifically that can represent their products well. And, you know, when they turn on the tube and see Phil Hellmuth throwing chairs across the room, I don't think it does us a lot of good for attracting those types of sponsors.
Yeah, it's almost frustrating when you talk to somebody that's in charge of the marketing and you get turned down because of maybe the image of poker. He doesn't think it quite fits the profile for the company.
Yeah.
And then he turns around and says, but our CEO would like to invite you to his home game. Well, that has happened to me. So, you know, it's...
Yeah. Dusty, one of the other things you blogged about recently is when internet poker does come back, and I say when, not if, there may need to be some changes involving some of the software that people are using. And I'm not talking about the PokerStars client or the Full Tilt client or whatever it is people are using to actually play the games, but some of the behind-the-scenes software like, heads-up displays and things like Poker Tracker and Poker Manager and that sort of thing. Are you completely opposed to online pros and other players using that software?
Well, yeah, I'm not really opposed to anybody using it at this time. I mean, I think that, you know, it's out there and it's not against the rules. And, you know, I don't hold anything against anybody to use it. I've used it for the bulk of my career. I just think that, you know, if we are going to head down the path of having licensed and regulated poker and we have some sort of governing body, then, you know, my hope is that they start to, they look to eliminate that type of stuff, which might eliminate the hand history in general. I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but I guess a lot of my feeling is that, again, it kind of comes from the golf background I have. You know, I spent a lot of time at golf courses. I spent a lot of time playing poker, you know, at golf courses from time to time. And, you know, I talk to everyone as much as possible about this exact issue. And this is, to me, the demographic that poker needs. I mean, they need the golfers. The golfers love to play poker. They're playing all the time at golf courses, and they love the game, and they're the ones with all the money, I mean, if we're just being honest. And, you know, that demographic is huge. And everybody tells me, you know, all the time, you know, hey, I'd love to play on there, but, you know, I hear all these kids got these crazy software programs, and, you know, I don't want to compete against that, and so I just prefer to play live. And, you know, but if it was, you know, Harrah's.com or Caesars.com they were logging into and they knew nobody had any software and all that stuff, they all, you know, for the most part, tell me that they'd love to get on there and play.
I think you raised a very valid point. Some of the sites don't discourage bots even. I mean, there's I read that there's over 1,000 skins now out there, different sites, most of them unregulated. And what have we done with the great DOJ here? The two sites that are probably the most regulated, the two sites that probably have the most security and try to fight and make sure that it's best for the players,
yeah.
they go after.
Yep.
Okay, don't get me started again. I get me away from this because I'm going to rant and rave about this if I'm not careful. Quick question for you. What's going to be the future for Dusty now? I mean, if you're not an online team pro, are you considering moving out of the country? Are you going to play more tournaments? Are you going to try and get involved in cash games? Where's Dusty going to be in a few months from now?
Yeah, well, I'm going to start off by going to World Series of Poker and enjoying that and hopefully being able to make myself some money. And beyond that, I'm contemplating moving to Vegas. And in fact, I'm pretty sure that that'll probably happen. And just probably just play live continue to write books like I have been. And, you know, not put so much pressure on myself to make a ton of money at the tables. I've been fortunate to have a lot of success in poker, and I've definitely anticipated a day like this happening, and so I made sure to hold on to as much as I could. And so right now I'm kind of just going to, you know, take, I guess, a little bit of a breather for me and hope that the licensed and regulated online poker comes soon, because I'd definitely like to get back in there.
This is the Final Table Poker Radio Show with Dennis Phillips. I'm Paul Harris. We're talking with Dusty Schmidt, who's got a new book out called Don't Listen to Phil Hellmuth. And let's talk about a couple of things in here. You know, I mentioned that we had Annie on right before you, and she's got her own book out now. And one, the thing we talked to her at the end was a chapter that she's written about pre-flop bet sizing, in which she says, don't go crazy, just raise enough to get the job done. You also write about pre-flop bet sizing in your book. So what's your advice?
Yeah, I mean, I like to fluctuate a lot depending on the opponents. I mean, if I get, you know, especially if I have a pretty good hand and I'm not going to be playing with a particular opponent too often, you know, I might go ahead and make it 4, 4.5x pre-flop. So in a 5-10 game, make it 40-45, just because I think it might be so likely that a weaker opponent would call and I can play a bigger pot with them. Against a lot of, you know, really tough guys in the blinds, you know, if I'm against some world-class opponents and I'm just on the button, I might just make it a pretty standard min-raise open and, you know, play smaller pots with people that I don't really expect to find a whole lot of edge against.
I think this book has a lot of things in it that are basically, there are no golden rules. There are no set things you have to do. You have to play the table. So that these things that they come out with, like, you know, punish the limpers, don't necessarily apply to every table you sit down at. Now, is that kind of what you were trying to portray here in this book?
Yeah, in a lot of ways, you know, I mean, when you ask, you know, good poker players, you know, what to do in a situation, oftentimes the answer is, it depends. And a lot of what I'm trying to do with the book is to basically give people a thought process that goes into the decisions rather than just saying, you know, hey, with this hand in this situation, you know, raise this amount or do this or do that. I'd rather help to kind of shape the thought process that I feel has helped me have as much success at the tables as I've had.
Let me just ask you about a couple of chapter titles here, and you can give us like 30-second lessons from those from those chapters, okay?
Okay.
Three betting a lot makes me tough. This is, by the way, one of the bad pieces of advice that that Dusty writes about in here. Of the 50 worst pieces of poker advice you've ever heard, one of them is, three betting a lot makes me tough. Why?
Yeah, I think a lot of people just try and three bet just for the sake of trying to appear tough or difficult to play against or tricky or what have you. And I think what a lot of people, what I've noticed is that people don't necessarily understand why they're doing it. Now, it's not like three betting is bad. I would certainly never advocate that. I think in a lot of cases it's quite good. But, for example, if you're against an opponent who has sort of a strategy where he's never going to call a three bet, and he's going to basically be folding or four betting preflop, and this type of opponent is more common in 100 big blind games as opposed to really deep stack games. But if you're against an opponent like that, I see so often people will three-bet hands like ace-jack suited and ace-queen suited and, you know, just really good playable hands post-flop. But if your opponent is never going to call a three-bet and you can't really withstand a four-bet, well, then you're basically turning your hand completely into a bluff. You're never really utilizing the hand post-flop. So I would advocate calling in a place like that and then looking for spots post-flop to put in action.
Oh, now, I want to hear you answer this one in 30 seconds. The great players are crazy? Go ahead and explain that chapter in 30 seconds.
Well, that's the myth that he debunks in that chapter, that the great players are crazy, right?
Parentheses, yeah, Gus Hansen, in parentheses.
Going with that is, I see so often it feels like, especially with the success Tom Dwan has had and some of the really aggressive guys like him, they watch them on TV, and I think it's only natural, like people do with a lot of different athletes, to want to be like them. And so people start getting pretty crazy and start playing a lot of pots that they're not necessarily equipped to play the way Tom Dwan is equipped to play, to make major post-flop decisions. And so I guess where I'm going with a lot is that you don't have to be Tom Dwan to make a lot of money. I've played a relatively tighter style all throughout my career, and it's worked, and so I'm sort of passing that along to others.
All right, one last thing we're going to ask you about here is continuation bets, because you've got a chapter in here debunking the old saying that you should always continuation bet the same amount, or at least the same percentage of the pot, each time that you have let out or opened a pot. You don't think that's right?
No, I think there's just a lot of different occasions. I mean, there's some opponents who, for example, will just call really, really light if you make a C bet. Against those types of opponents, I might do something, or I should say if I make a small C bet, they're really likely to call and kind of speculate and see what's going on. And, I might take a strategy against an opponent like that and make a really small C bet on the flop that he'll always call and then just pot the turn kind of set him up for putting a little bit more money in the pot and then usually having to fold the turn because he peeled so light on the flop. There's different opponents react to different ways to continuation bets. Maybe if you're playing against a really loose passive player who is going to play very fitter fold, you also might make a really large bet with your strong hands because he figures not to go anywhere if he flopped a piece of it, but he's going to fold all the time if he doesn't have anything. So I might make a really large bet with a big hand and then make a really small bet just to make kind of a cheap continuation bet with a weak hand.
Well, and sometimes actually that almost minimum amount continuation bet looks scarier than a standard one. So you've got to realize what kind of story you're playing there, too. Okay, another chapter. Don't donk. I got to hear this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that have sort of, I guess it sort of started with, Mike Sexton's, on the World Poker Tour, saying, hey, lead out and find out where you stand. And then a lot of people sort of picked on that advice, and then they almost went too far in the other direction and just said, they label it a donk bet if you were to just lead out into the pot without the lead in the betting. And donk being a short term for a donkey. So apparently people don't really think that play is that good, but I actually think that leading out and having a range of hands that you might do that with in certain spots against certain types of opponents can be really good. There's a lot of guys, for example, where if the flop comes, if you were to call a raise out of the blinds, and the flop comes, three low cards of the flush draw, you could just basically keep donking out against that guy flop, turn, and river, and you can just kind of rep whatever comes in, and usually he's going to be peeling with, any pair over cards on the flop or some type of weak draw that you can just keep leading out and push him off. So I think that there are a lot of different ways to win a pot, and donk leading can be one of them, and I think it's important to have in your arsenal.
Really good stuff, Dusty. Dennis and I have both read parts of the book and found some fascinating advice in here for players, I think, at every level. And congratulations to that. We're going to tweet a link to it on both of our accounts here in a couple minutes and, of course, put a link up on our Final Table website as well. It's called Don't Listen to Phil Hellmuth Correcting the 50 Worst Pieces of Poker Advice You've Ever Heard. Dusty, we appreciate you coming on today, and we look forward to seeing you at the Rio this summer for the World Series.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks so much for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Our pleasure.
Take care, Dusty.
Dusty Schmidt joining us here at the Final Table. Before we go, I got to say, we were sorry to hear some sad news about some former guests of the show, Joe Seebach, Prahlad Friedman, Eric Baldwin, Maria Ho, and Tiffany Michelle, all amongst the 11 Ultimate Bet pros who were fired yesterday, along with Brandon Cantu, Scott Ian, Dave Stan, Adam Levy, Brian Devonshire, and Trishelle Canatella. UB let everybody go and said that they are restructuring the company, and they're trying to figure out if they'll ever be able to get money back to their players, and really murky waters that they're in, including a raid in Costa Rica a few days ago.
There was. They raided their offices down there, so... you know, see some of the files, everything like that. There's a lot of gray area going on. There's a lot of things that have got to come out that I can't really comment about right now.
Yeah.
Hopefully, in the next 2, 3, 4 weeks, there'll be a lot more clarity of what's going on. And I do hope, because there are some good people over at UB, I do hope that they get it together and they get the money back to the players and everything works out.
And the same with Full Tilt.
And the same with Full Tilt. Oh, yeah, absolutely. Please, I'm not in any way saying anything against Full Tilt.
Yeah.
I know they're diligently working, trying to figure out a way to get the money back to the players.
Because that's the bottom line now.
Yeah.
Get the American players their money back so they can go on with their lives and come play cash games against us. That's all the time we have for today. Dennis Phillips joining me here in St. Louis at the Harrah's Poker Room feature table. I am Paul Harrah's. We'll see you next week, Tuesday at 3 on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. And download all of our podcasts on thechipleader.com.